on Minnesota sports facilities. Today is Wednesday, September 10, 2014. Even though our agenda says 2013, we know it's 2014. And we are appreciative of you all being here. And I'm always excited to be here with my wonderful co-chair and also our vice chair, Representative Brainerd. There's a couple things that we are going to talk about today, but before we get started and before I provide my wonderful co-chair and our vice chair space to, you know, give any opening statements that they like, I like to always revisit just so that people really understand this committee's authority and just so everyone is really clear is that this commission is established under the authority of the Legislative Coordinating Commission to oversee the operating and capital budgets of the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority. And the commission is charged with these three notions. One is providing financial oversight of the authority as described herein. And also the adoption of a statewide authority structure for the operation and management of sports facilities and entertainment venues under the jurisdiction of the authority. And the authority membership shall represent the interests of both the metropolitan area and greater Minnesota. And finally, creating a comprehensive management plan that alleviates booking and scheduling concerns regarding the sports facilities and entertainment venues under the jurisdiction of the authority. So therein lies the charge and the authority of this commission. And again, the reason for me regurgitating that to you is because sometimes people think that we have a lot more authority than we do, but it always keeps us focused, and so we're going to talk about things within that construct. So with that being said, Senator Rosen, you have any opening comments before we go forward?
All I would like to say is good morning to the members. Good morning, Chair. I appreciate your comments. And we have taken the summer off, but now it's fall. It's time to look at some of the issues that have sprung up over the interim, and we're going to have an open discussion about that. I believe the our standard is not to have public testimony except from a few of the folks that are directly involved with the project. Otherwise, all the other communications have been put around the desk here with the members. And it's just a pleasure to be back and looking forward to talking about this project.
Well, thank you so very much. And the vice chair is absolutely correct. And I would like to acknowledge before we hear from Representative Brainerd is that we did receive a letter from dated August 22nd, 2014. It's a letter that seems to be signed off by a number of folks concerned about the bird safe design issues. And it's my understanding that Michelle Kelm-Helgen, Chair Helgen, will talk about that in her presentation. But I wanted to acknowledge receipt of that letter and that it has been circulated to the members as well. So with that being said, I would like to now turn our attention to Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I just want to welcome everyone who's here today. I wish we had a bit fuller membership attendance because the way the discussion goes in this commission as opposed to a committee is most of the discussion occurs between the official representatives of the organization and commission members. So I hope we're able to at least raise the issues that have been brought to us in a way that we here clearly articulated the authority's history and position and what we might do going forward. But just welcome, and I look forward to a robust discussion.
Well, thank you so much, Vice Chair Representative Brainerd. We are now going to the agenda. The second on the agenda is approval of the meeting minutes from January 23rd, and because we do not have a quorum at this time, but hopefully we will, then we will take up that item at that time. So we will start with an update on the stadium development, and I would ask Michelle Kelm-Helgen, the chair of the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority, to come forward. And welcome to the commission meeting, and thank you so much for joining us on this rainy but wonderful Wednesday in Minnesota.
Thank you very much. Can you, is the microphone on? I really appreciate being here today. It has been a while, and there's been a lot of progress that's been made since my last update to the Oversight Commission. The first thing that I thought we would look at is to give you an update on the budget, and I believe we handed out a memo that we circulated at our last meeting that gives a pretty complete project update, budget update review. But just briefly to highlight sort of where we've been, the last, you know, we always talk about the fact that the good news is in this area, as you can see as you drive through the downtowns of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Bloomington, construction is up. In a certain sense, from our project, it also, the fact that construction is up throughout, you know, Minnesota, it has also increased some of our costs. So we had a couple months where we really had to spend a great deal of time working on our budget. It's been very clear from day one from the legislative leaders that, and state officials, that there is no more money from the state for this project. We need to live within our budget. So as we face these budget challenges, we really looked at ways that the design to a certain extent could be altered to save some money, where costs could be shaved off. Mortenson Construction, as our Minnesota firm leading the construction of the stadium, has been a great partner along with our architect in looking for ways to save money. So the bottom line is we have now basically brought the project back into budget. And the way we did that is by making some budget adjustments and finding some ways to save on costs. But primarily what we were able to do is to work with the Minnesota Vikings to increase their contribution overall to the project. So if you look at basically page 3 of the memo that I handed out, it looks at the original contribution of the state along with the team. And in that upper box, in terms of source of funds, we looked at the original team contribution was $477 million. The state of Minnesota, which was the combination of the $298 million from the state of Minnesota, along with the $150 million that was part of the city's contribution that actually comes through the state, the total brings us to the $498. The state contribution remains the same. However, what happened was the team actually put in some additional money. And now, instead of our total project budget being $975 million, our budget actually goes up to $1,023 million. And essentially, what that contribution is comprised of is, originally, the team a few months ago had come up with sort of, as we were looking at our budget, they had come up with some contingency financing, basically saying, if we need it, we will have this additional amount of money. It totaled $26.4 million that we would put in. Well, we now know we need that money, and so that money is not being looked at anymore as a contingency, but it's being looked at as part of our budget, and they essentially are putting that cash into the program. They, in addition, had looked at another $2.5 million that we had talked about earlier for some things that were being added to the building, larger video board, some escalators, some additional design money, and that totaled $2.5 million. So that's part of this money that's going into it. And then, in addition, they're putting in essentially another $19.7 million. So 21.4 of new money is going in, along with that 26.4 of contingency money that had previously been identified that now is essentially being converted to cash. So essentially we increased our budget to include that new team money, and we now are up to $1,024 million to round it out, if you will. So we really, that for us, I think, was a significant progress with the team. It maintained the original building design that I think is making our building so unique and really attracting a lot of national attention. and it allows us to move forward with our budget in balance and basically maintaining all the features of the building that we had originally outlined and described to you. So that was a pretty significant move, and we certainly appreciated that additional contribution from the team. And we also recognize the fact that there is no more money from the state and that we need to be within our budget. So we are within our budget, and I think it was from our standpoint, it was a great collaborative process that we used to get to that point. So in addition to having to be on budget, we also need to be on schedule. So the second thing that you asked that I do is give you an update on where we are from a construction standpoint within the project. So I think, as everybody knows, I'm going to see if this thing will advance. Maybe I'm... Tiffany, can you...
And just so the public will know that you hear a telephone ringing, there are some members who could only join us by telephone, and so we're trying to get that technology together right now as well.
And Mr. Chair, there is an LCCMR meeting going on right now, too.
Right.
So there,
okay.
There are some other commitments for members.
Absolutely. All right.
Okay.
Chair?
So essentially, we have the construction kind of milestone schedule to update you on. So I think, as everybody knows, our groundbreaking start of construction actually occurred in November of 2013. And at that time, the Metrodome, as you know, was still standing, and we were playing the final Viking games in the stadium that really didn't end until January. However, they began construction on the back part where the old parking lot was, and we've continued that construction as we go. So the concrete structure, and I'm going to have some photographs that kind of show you this timeline and how it's progressed, but the main concrete structure was begun to be built already in March 2014. The steel structure was started in July of this year, and I think you will be amazed, if you haven't been by the site, to see how much of the steel is already up, and actually the entire building. You can really already get a sense of what it's going to look like and what the footprint was. But as we progress, we will actually begin the exterior enclosure. We're going to start enclosing the building in January of 2015. The roof will be completed in November of 2015, and then we will be doing all the finishes throughout that next year and actually have the playing field installed in January of 2016. And essentially, the building will be substantially completed in July of 2016, so less than 2 years from now. We have really awarded most of the stadium. We're down about 95% of the bids have been awarded. The upcoming final awards that will be made will be for the operable doors, the seating, the interior glazed metal panels, some of the partitions, and then we begin a lot of the furniture and fixtures awards that will be coming up. But essentially, within about another 60 days, 100% of the subcontract awards will be completed. We essentially, I'm going to go back to this, but the one thing I want to emphasize is right now, there are over 200 Minnesota companies that are working on the stadium. It is just amazing to me to see the amount of economic development that has come to so many of our businesses within the state. Right now, there are about 570 workers on site on a daily basis. 30% are carpenters, 20% are iron workers, 18% are laborers, and 14% are masons, doing masonry work. And essentially, already, because during the demolition and some of the early construction work, we had obviously other workers cycling in and out. So there already to date have been over 1,400 workers on the site. And currently today, working on a daily basis on the current projects, there's about 570 workers. And I think most of you will remember that it will grow to right around 7,500 workers in total. Alex Tittle from our office will join me here in a few minutes and will give you a breakdown on where we're at as far as our equity goals for both workers and businesses and how we're meeting that piece of the legislation. And I think you'll be pleased to hear that we are not only meeting the goals, but we are actually exceeding the goals at this time. But first, I want to just briefly go through to just remind everybody. So this was, you know, February 2014. We still basically had the Metrodome in place. They had just deflated the roof and were beginning the demolition. So then in March, everything started, you know, the demolition really began in earnest, and there was only this one section that basically is on the west side of the stadium site facing toward the downtown that was left. And by April 1st, the entire demolition was complete, and Fratellone was a Minnesota-based company that did the demolition. It was actually a very difficult building to demolish. It had been built so sturdily that ring beam was really difficult to bring down because of the way it was reinforced. Fratellone and Mortenson Corporation did a fabulous job of really looking at, because we're such a tight urban site, they couldn't just come in and use explosives to, you know, do most of this. So they took it down in a very careful, piece-by-piece manner. In the end, that ring beam was so difficult to bring down, they did have to come in on a weekend, having given notice to all the neighborhoods and Hennepin County Medical Center, the police, and everyone else, and they used some charges that had some small explosive charges that ultimately brought down that ring beam. But, you know, again, when I look at the Minnesota companies and the way they've done their work and the fact that they're so embedded in the community and know how to work with the community and the neighborhoods and the surrounding businesses, it was really a smooth process. So the construction really began to move in earnest in May. And again, I just remind everybody, it's only the first part of September. So this was just 4 months ago. This is where we were at as they started, you know, doing the concrete pilings that are on the east side. They really have started kind of on the freeway side of the site is where most of the construction is happening. So you can see the pilings that were all put in place then in June as they began to construct that first concourse level. And now, again, as you look at this project, you're looking at the main concourses that are coming on site. We currently have 5 tower cranes that are there, and then we brought in that huge crawler crane that is noted to be one of the 2 largest cranes in the world, literally, because of the weight of some of the steel that's having to be moved around. So this is the picture. The first, you can see this big steel beam that's being held up by that green shoring tower. As you look at, this is actually that big piece of steel. That is what is going to hold up the roof on this building. And I'll show you in a minute, there's a second large piece of steel that comes from the other side. And you can see this large tower crane that actually sits with this V and then that on the right side of the screen. That's that large tower crane that is, because of the weight of these steel pieces, 550,000 pounds of steel in that one piece that has to be moved. So it's, you know, the amount of the technical nature of this construction project is unlike anything that's ever been done in this state, just because of the size and scope of some of what they're moving around. So now you can see that large steel piece that we looked at before, just a few days ago, they added another arm to the back of that, and then there'll be a piece that comes down, and there's another one that comes up on the other side of the screen that you can't quite see, and eventually those two pieces will meet in the middle, and that's what's going to hold up that roof. But I also point out, here we sit in September, you see we're actually going to be starting to do some of the interior finishes in that lower level, because on the east side of the building, that lower level is beginning to really take shape. Mm-hmm. And you can also see the main concourse as well as an upper level concourse, and you can start seeing some of the stadium bowl where seats will be put in place taking shape as well. This again, okay, so this is the view. This is a nice view of that other piece of steel that's come in. So this now is essentially the east side of the stadium. We saw that large steel coming on the west side, on the downtown side. This is now the freeway side of the building. Again, the big piece of steel that's held up by that shoring tower. And eventually those two trusses will meet with a large piece that comes in the middle. But as you can see here, you see the main level concourse and actually the upper level concourse that already is in place. And then you can start seeing like stairways for the seats. And I mean, it's just amazing to see the progress that's been made here. And the amount of steel and concrete that is in this project is just like blows you away when you actually see it on the site. And there you see folks as they're working on those concourses. So that's kind of where we're at on the construction, and I think it gives you a really good sense. Mortenson actually, with the steel work that they're doing this week, is working, has folks working into the night. You know, it's kind of interesting because our offices are kind of kitty-corner across the street from the project, so I'm always kind of back and forth between the project and our office, and I see and talk to a lot of the workers. And, you know, to a person, these, first of all, these jobs, as you know, I mean, the daily wage rates vary from $22 an hour up to $70 an hour. These are really well-paying jobs. And you talk to these workers, and they're like, this is the greatest project. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of overtime if we are able to do it. It's just really been a great boom for this area. And actually now, they, because of the steel work that they're doing, they're running the project another shift at night is actually being done so that they can take advantage of the weather.
A question, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Helgen, are those extra costs borne by the Mortensons?
Yeah, it's all within the budget. They manage the construction budget, and when they need overtime or to run an additional shift, that's all within their cost, yes.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Why are they running overtime right now?
Well, Chair to Hollywood. Stay on schedule and take advantage of the weather at various points, they just plan, and I'm not sure it's really overtime. I think it's another shift that they bring in. And it's just part of their planned construction schedule that they lay out in advance and that they plan on. Oh. So it's not that they're behind. It's just that they're wanting to make sure they maximize the work that has to happen. And, of course, the way they schedule work, they have to make sure before they can, you know, move to the next step, they have to have certain things done. So some of that steel work apparently just needs to have a really intensive effort so they can keep doing the other things that have to be done on the project. The one thing with this project, you know, with those tower cranes that are sitting, you know, literally 200 feet in the air, if it's windy, if the winds are any higher than I think about 15 miles an hour, they can't work. So, you know, everything, they take advantage when they have good weather conditions for some of this steel work that has to be done with all these cranes. They have to take advantage of that as well. But
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Chair Helgen, you mentioned that there's going to be bids being awarded, at least some smaller bids for the next 60 days. Do you anticipate any further surprises in terms of higher cost coming in, or is this 1.023 kind of the figure that's cast in cement right now?
Right.
Chair Helgen.
Yes, thank you. Chair. We anticipate at this point, because we really have all the bids out, and while those final bids haven't been awarded, the packages and the bids are in. So I think everyone is pretty comfortable at this point that the budget is pretty well set.
Follow Representative Anderson? Okay. Just so that folks know that we do have Senator Miller, who is now on the line with us as well. So welcome, Senator Miller. Okay, maybe he can just hear me, but he can't answer.
I just had my phone on mute. It took me a few times to get in, but I am here listening. Thank you.
All right, thank you for joining us. All right, any other questions before we move to the next subject with Chair Kim Helgen? We talked about the budget and we talked about the schedule. Would you mind, since there are no additional questions, talking a little bit about the bird issue? As we talked about earlier, we have, as a committee, received a letter from a number of interested stakeholders, from the Alliance for Sustainability to the Audubon chapter of Minneapolis, and the list goes on. So there's roughly about 15 groups that have signed off on this letter, and their main concern seems to be around bird-safe glass and what your thoughts are about that, as well as if there are any other alternatives that you all are considering that will yield at the end of the day safety for birds, because they articulate in the letter that it's estimated between 365 and 988 million birds are killed annually, and they have a real concern about that. So if you could talk about that, that would be great.
Great. Well, I think as everyone knows, the design of the stadium had been worked on, you know, with our architect HKS, and was basically completed in May of 2013. And the original design that we were focusing on was meant to be a complete departure from what the Metrodome had been. Everyone talked about probably the main barrier to economic development with the Metrodome, and the fact that it never generated anything else around it was the fact that it was a very insular facility. You couldn't see in, you couldn't see out. It kind of looked like a spaceship that had landed in this sea of parking lots and chain link fences around it. So we worked for over a year with a committee that by legislation had been put together, that the city of Minneapolis basically had appointed, that would be working with us on the exterior design. And it was chaired by Tom Fisher, who was the lead, who's the head of the architecture school at the University of Minnesota, along with David Wilson, who's the managing partner at Accenture. And it had all sorts of neighborhood representatives, business representatives. So their charge was to work with us on the exterior design of the stadium. And the main design element that I think we all got on board with and that was key was the fact that this new stadium had to be much more open and transparent and really connected to the neighborhood. So a lot of the glass was really a key feature in being able to see in and see out and have it be a much more connected facility to the area around it. And then, of course, that roof, which essentially had this ETFE material that allows you to see in, see out, was also a key feature of that design, 60% of the roof being that sort of transparent material. So this was the design. We've got, you know, all these neighborhood connections, bike trails, walkways, whatever. So after the design had been presented and we had this public and the board had voted and we basically had completed the design with our architects, about, I'd say, a month later, we were contacted by the Audubon Society, and they came in to meet with us to talk about that west-facing wall and their concerns about the glass and how it would affect the birds. So as we spoke with them, they really started with sort of operational and design guidelines that they wanted us to consider. And they had a list of lighting design and lighting operations pieces that they wanted us to try to work with them to achieve. And I will tell you that literally two the detail, I believe we are going to meet their lighting design guidelines as well as their operational guidelines. And this is really what, you know, there's many buildings in downtown Minneapolis, downtown St. Paul, and Bloomington that have probably more glass than the stadium does. And the same ways that they manage their buildings from an operational standpoint are things that we are committed to manage with our building. So we were able to work with them to do that. In addition, they asked us if we would consider looking at this fritted glass that could be used on the outside of the building. And we looked at that, and we, you know, good faith, we really tried to look at that and to see how it would affect the design of the building. And essentially, you know, we talked about the fact that the design had been done. This fritted glass is, I don't know, somewhere upwards of a little bit more than $1 million to include. But frankly, it was, you know, and the cost was certainly somewhat of a factor, especially with all the budget issues that we were having anyway. But probably the main thing that I think we were concerned about is just how it affected the design of the building that we had spent so much time and focus and work with so many different people to really have this transparent building that you can see in and see out. So for those reasons, we really determined that the fritted glass was not going to be a solution that we would be able to do. However, we were able to accommodate, as I say, as we're putting together the lighting design and all that kind of thing, we're able to accommodate those features in the work that we're doing, and we're spending a lot of time trying to make sure that we can adhere to that.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you've done a really clear job of giving us the timeline and some of the concerns and the decision-making. I have two questions. I have no expertise on this whatsoever. I know as much as the average citizen. I've read the paper. I've seen the discussion on Almanac. We've gotten some materials and emails, but I haven't had time to digest them all. So just a couple of questions from that frame. One, are there other options besides the fritted glass in terms of the actual physical, the type of glass using or the design in relation to the glass that would address some of the bird safety issues? You know, I've been led to believe that under LEED certification guidelines there are some other design components. So that's one piece. Then the second relates to the timeline question. I'm surprised that the issue of the type of glass used in relation to bird safety didn't come up earlier or from any of the, you know, you talked about Tom Fisher as the chair of the University of Minnesota Architecture and Design. I would think they would have some awareness of the issue. So I'm surprised that the issue wasn't raised earlier. So I'm just, it's clear to me that late in the design process, that's a problem. But I just wondered if you could comment on why it might not have occurred earlier. So the two questions, are there other options and then the timeline?
Sure. Kim Helgen.
You know, I know at this point there has been, as far as I'm concerned, people have talked to us about things that have been done in other places with possibly noise mitigation, with, you know, maybe some other things that could be done on the exterior of the glass at some point if things actually turned out to be a major problem. But I haven't seen anything specific that I could talk to you about at this point. So right now, the way the things have been managed, like with the IDS building and that kind of thing, is just the birds migrate at night and in the early morning, and that lights out program is probably the most effective thing. And then the other thing is the lighting design, and we actually have... We've got the list of that Audubon had given us early on the lighting design issues that they wanted us to follow. And we did meet with them on multiple occasions to work with them on these things and also their operational guidelines. So things like the color of the lights, some lights are more or less attractive to birds. Having lights focused down rather than up And of course, the main thing being turning out whatever lights you can at night. By and large, the lights out will definitely be manageable. We do, for example, in the spring, we have oftentimes literally run all night baseball games that are played by high schools, colleges, community colleges. So, you know, very rarely, but there are times when you literally will have events being done in the building at night. So that would be, you know, certainly something that we'd have to deal with. But by and large, the operational guidelines that they've identified are possible. Tiffany, we do have a packet that we put together with their operational and lighting guidelines, as well as sort of a little bit of background on where we started and sort of where we ended up. So I can have Tiffany give those to your staff.
That'd be great.
Give to the rest of the...
So someone from my staff can take those copies and of the packets and bring them around. Thank you, Joey. And while that is being distributed, so I think the other question that you may have touched on a little bit, which is the timeline related to bird safety and whether it came up earlier, and I think you alluded to the fact that there were some discussions. Of course, I know based on the operational guidelines and the lighting design guidelines, those things came up early, and you sort of talked about it at that time. Is that right? Any other questions on this issue? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Helgen, just going back to this letter that is from the 13 groups or 15 groups addressing this issue, they mention, and I don't know if you've seen this letter. It's August 22nd.
Letter. Have you seen the letter? Kim Helgen?
Not sure.
Chair.
Can you give this to Chair? To the Chair, please.
Yeah, thank you. If you can give her that real quick, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. So in the fourth paragraph, it mentions, we appreciate that you incorporated lighting design changes and have agreed to operationalize the lights out recommendations of the Audubon Society. While further discussions with the Audubon Society regarding bird glass took place, no meaningful action has taken place to address this problem. Has there been communication? Have they received this statement and some of the actions that the MSFA is going to be doing to address this since August 22nd? Can I assume that this letter is somewhat predated or old?
Yes. Well, sure. We do have a number of meetings that are coming up on Friday. We're meeting with the Bird Conservancy people, and they specifically want to walk through the lighting design and some of the operational things that we're doing, and we're going to be doing that. And as I understand it, there's also going to be a meeting that takes place with the Audubon Society to just go through the details of what we're doing. So those meetings are definitely scheduled and ongoing.
And Mr. Chair?
Senator Rosen.
I've seen this letter.
Thank you. You have seen this letter?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Also, the other question is, then I would assume, since you mentioned 95% of the bids have been awarded, that the glass has been ordered, it's on its way, and that there will be, as you said, further discussion. You have these meetings planned. You're addressing these concerns, because obviously if there are 70,000 emails that have gone out on this, it is a big concern, but as you said, also there's very tall buildings in downtown, just a few blocks away from the stadium. So everybody's had to deal with this at some point, I would assume, because this is a concern.
Right.
Chair.
We do have, I will say, the glass award was actually made last January of 2014. The fabrication has begun. It's a Minnesota company that is doing the glass. And, you know, we're going to be installing the first pieces of glass actually in December to January of this, December 2014 or January 2015. So very soon. So, you know, this has all been in process, and yes, the glass has been ordered.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a bit hypothetical because I think it's more what lessons can be learned from the fact that the glass discussion didn't take place earlier in the design process. Clearly, in terms of the glass itself, we seem to be beyond any reasonable timeline to change that item itself. Whether there are other design elements that could affect bird safety, I don't know, but maybe that's an ongoing discussion with the Audubon Society. But do you think that the type of design we had here could incorporate, not currently, but could have incorporated bird safety glass if it had been considered by the architects earlier in the process? Would it have been, you know, would that type of glass been compatible with the design? I'm hearing you say maybe not. So,
Chair Kim Helgen.
This exact design that is so based on that kind of openness and transparency probably is not a design that really, the fritted glass, you know, is a fairly dense fritted pattern, and it does affect the views inside and the views outside, which sort of defeats the whole purpose of having this, you know, kind of open, transparent, connected design. So I'm probably not the best person. I'm not an architect and I'm not a design person, but clearly this has been something that has affected the, we do have, and this is, you know, a illustration of what the fritted glass sort of views in and out are. Do we have that as well that we could give to the staff?
That'd be great to have.
Just so you kind of know what it is we're talking about, so you can sort of get a sense from a design
and Joey's
standpoint.
Right there. So as he's passing that around, Chair, I was under the impression, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there were discussions early on about these bird safety issues and questions, and that's why there's the operational information that you all received, as well as the lighting design guidelines that you received. So I took that to illustrate that early discussions were being held about bird safety, but there's been some decisions as to what to adopt based on the design and what could not realistically be adopted in light of the design. Am I right or wrong about that, or am I totally off base? Chair.
No, Mr. Chair, that is definitely correct. We, early on, as we met with them and then, you know, had follow-up meetings, we looked at sort of all three of those pieces. One was the glass, and one was the design elements, and the other one was the operational elements. And we clearly were able to accommodate the design and operational pieces, but because the design was already done and we were so far into it, and it was a really key element of what we were doing, we were not able to accommodate the other piece of it.
Any other questions of Chair Kim Helgen? Oh, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. My question relates to glass, but it's not about birds. So if there's any other discussion on birds, let's finish that first.
Okay. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being in and out. I was at the LCC meeting as well. I might have missed this, but are we going to be hearing from people from the Audubon Society, or did we already? Is that already a question? Are the birds going to be hitting the building, or are they going to fly safely past?
Well, thank you for that question. What we talked about early on, Representative Hoppe, was number one, that traditionally this committee doesn't hear, you know, or take testimony from constituents and others, right? Number two, we knew that we were going to have a presentation by the chair, and asked that the concerns articulated in the letter that we did receive from Audubon be addressed, and we did ask those questions on their behalf in order to get some specific questions to that. Number three, based on the testimony that I've heard, that there will always be these ongoing conversations, always wanting to make sure that the stadium is doing everything it can in order to decrease the possibility of any birds being killed or running into its building. And so that's an ongoing conversation. But they believe their adoption or the authority's adoption of the operational guidelines and the lighting design guidelines will decrease that possibility. But they still have an open-ended conversation continuing about it. That's my understanding, and I hope I regurgitated your testimony correctly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any other questions of the chair? All right. And I think Mr. Tittles was going to join the chair. Oh, I'm sorry.
Beyond Bird Glass.
Oh, Beyond Bird Glass. I'm sorry. I'm just too anxious. So forgive me. Blame it on my head and not my heart, Representative Anderson. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since I first saw pictures of the proposed stadium, you know, it's a lot of glass area, and I think about a greenhouse, for example. It can get really, really hot in the summertime. What is being done to address that concern of, you know, solar heat coming into the building in the summertime to not get too hot?
Chair Kim Helgen.
Yes, Representative, Mr. Chair. The ETFE on the roof is the primary thing that we've worked on to manage that concern. The ETFE is this, it stands for a chemical compound, but it's a material that actually is layered and pillowed. And that actually does have some fritting on it so that it deflects the sunlight depending upon how the sun comes in and the angle and the temperatures. But we've done studies in terms of temperature control, both from, as you know, we've got some large glass doors that can open in the spring, summer, and fall. But the building will be air conditioned and, you know, heated and cooled and that kind of thing. And our architects and engineers have assured us that the building will function and will be able to, you know, maintain a consistent temperature.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Now, I'm a farmer, and we've had a lot of hail storms this summer. How will this glass stand up to hail and storms and things like that?
Chair Kim Helgen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, we've been assured that the glass and the will withstand whatever weather elements would come in. We have the glass company, again, as well as Thornton Tomasetti, who's our structural engineers, assure us that we'll be fine.
Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Anderson piqued my interest in an issue we had talked about in an earlier commission meeting, and that was about energy efficiency within the building. And what I know that we're working toward high standards of efficiency in terms of, you know, you talked about heating and cooling, use of solar, and how does that relate to the issue that Representative Anderson raised about the solar?
Chair Kim Helgen.
Well, the building will be LEED certified, so we will meet those standards. And especially as it relates to the cooling, it's going to be a water circulation system that's used, which is very energy efficient. We've done a lot of work with the city on groundwater issues and other sustainability issues that I think will make a difference. The other thing is, from the just building design standpoint, that ETFE roof actually is quite efficient in terms of, you know, heating and cooling, and depending upon the temperatures, when it brings sun in and when it deflects it. So I think you're going to find that we've paid a lot of attention. Our architects have paid a lot of attention to those issues.
Representative Brainerd.
Mr. Chair, thank you. That's exactly what I was interested in. I'm hopeful that somewhere along the line we would present that information to the public in a way that they could see the detail of the attention we've paid to energy efficiency in both the design and the operation of the stadium.
We can add that at the next commission meeting, and I'll bring someone along who's got more background to be able to give you those details.
Senator Rosen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Helgen, my question is, have the folks looked at the issue of glare on the field with the glass? I know there's a lot of attention on the glass here.
Right.
And my second part of the question is there a concern that some of this technology that you are being used, whether it's energy efficiency or the film that's on top of the stadium, is going to become obsolete? And is it already obsolete? Is there a new technology out there that should have been better?
Mm-hmm. Chair Kim Helgen.
Thank you, Senator Rosen, Mr. Chair. We definitely have looked at there were sun studies that were done, both for the roof as well as, you know, any of the exterior lighting that comes in through the glass, that were done specifically focused on the NFL team in particular, because the NFL is obviously very particular about the conditions they have to play in and how that comes in. So they've spent a lot of time studying that, and they believe that it all will work from a playing standpoint very efficiently. And as far as the ETFE material and how that will withstand time and the elements and how it should withstand things, while ETFE has not been used in this type of stadium facility in the United States, it has been used extensively in stadiums and very large spaces in Europe and New Zealand. And we actually had our architects and our couple of staff people that went and looked at, there's a soccer stadium in New Zealand that has been like 22 years old, to see how the ETFE has held up over time. And it's been just a great product. And it actually now is being used more. We went out to Virginia recently to see a fairly large installation that was done on a Health and Human Services building out there, to look at what the installation looked like and to actually be able to, you know, make sure of what the transparency and the views would be. So there's been a lot of homework done on the reliability, durability, and the functionality of that ETFE, because obviously this is a 30-plus year investment by the state, the city, and the team, and we want to make sure that the building, you know, maintains its value over time. So.
Any other questions for Chair Kim Helgen? And since we have this little break, I just want to acknowledge that I know that Representative Atkins was trying to call in, and I'm not sure if he was successful in doing so. So we'll continue to work on that. But while I was going to have Alex Tittles come forward, but maybe I should have Lester Bagley come from the Minnesota Vikings. And just want to ask a couple questions about your increased investment and any other updates that you believe, Mr. Bagley, that you'd just like for us to know.
Sure. Thank you, Senator Champion, members of the committee. Appreciate the chance to be here. Lester Bagley, Executive Vice President, Minnesota Vikings. Very exciting. We're 1-0. The things are looking up at the purple. So we're excited with where our team is headed and where our organization is headed on the stadium front, and as a team, we're very excited about it. We have two seasons upcoming at TCF Bank Stadium, and we're working hard to host the Patriots at our first game this Sunday. So expecting good things this weekend going forward. In terms of the board meeting where the budget announcements were made, we also announced the hiring of SMG, the building operator, who is going to be outstanding for our state, our community, to bring in events to the new stadium. So we're excited with the building operator. We have one of the best in the world, and that's a major development. And we also agreed with the Stadium Authority on business terms to host a Major League Soccer franchise in the new stadium. So to provide certainty as we pursue a Major League Soccer franchise for this new stadium, and to play to again get more activity downtown, get more activity and energy in our state. But in terms of the budget, real quick, as Chair Kelm Helgen did an excellent job of giving the update, the budget now has increased from $975 to $1.024 billion. And you know, the board action and the Vikings ownership and the private commitment of additional $46.1 million brought the team's total additional private investment since last November to $49 million. And, you know, in terms of that process and how we got there, it was a difficult discussion, but with the principals, with the Stadium Authority, the Vikings, Mortenson Construction, and HKS Architects, the costs were coming in higher than we anticipated. Expectations were not aligned between the principals, but we spent several months collaboratively working hard. It was a difficult discussion, but, you know, came down to it. And it really came down to options of either we had to start to cut amenities out of the building or we had to put additional private investment into it. And I think that's the issue that it came down to. The bottom line is the Vikings and our ownership agreed that we need to preserve the iconic design. We need to preserve those fan amenities. And a lot of the $49 million that was the additional investment was for design and fan amenities like the pivoting doors, some technology, concessions issues, sound and acoustical treatments, as well as elevators and escalators. So basic issues that were important for the fans and for the game day experience. So very appreciative of the leadership of Chair Calum Helgen and the Stadium Authority to bring this issue to a close, to get the budget. We have going to have the bottom line, end of the day, we're going to have the best fan experience in the NFL, and we're very excited about where the stadium is headed.
Well, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Bagley? So if there's any other directive that I would be able to give, it still would be outside of our charge, but it would be just to continue to win games.
We're on it. Senator.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bagley, could you just give us a rundown on the soccer issue and where you're at
sure.
with that? I know there's
sure.
some work on that.
As I mentioned, Madam Chair, as I mentioned, we did agree to a business terms with the Stadium Authority to provide certainty to the MLS so they know coming in that the Stadium Authority wants the MLS in the stadium and that we have it was designed for MLS, and as part of the legislation that many of you worked on and voted for over the many years, it directly spoke to the MLS that we wanted this building to host MLS. Our investment, we believe, was predicated on MLS. So we have moved forward with Major League Soccer and their leadership in conversations about this stadium, about our interest and our potential investment in a new franchise. Right now, there are, if the Miami franchise goes through, there are 19 MLS teams in Major League Soccer. Their goal is to have 20 franchises by the year of 2024. So there's one, in that scenario, there's one franchise available. There's a strong interest and effort in Sacramento. There's a strong interest and effort in Las Vegas to bring a franchise. Obviously, soccer is a growing in the United States. It's probably the world's most popular sport, but in the United States, it's growing, especially among the younger generation, younger demographic. We think that, and the MLS believes that our stadium is ideal in the sense that it's the fan experience with the clear roof that Chair Calum Helgen talked about, and the five glass pivoting doors, as well as the fan gathering spaces inside the stadium and outside the stadium, is an ideal fan experience for MLS. In addition, we're working with the authority and with our architects to design a mechanism that would bring the house down, if you would, reduce the capacity to 20 to 25,000 in the stadium to make it more intimate for soccer and for a Major League Soccer franchise. Right now, the MLS averages 19,000 fans per season, which is more than the NBA, more than the NHL. It is a growing sport, and we think it would be ideal to have it in this market. We have a great market for soccer. We have ownership that's ready to invest, and of course, we have an ideal stadium that would be perfect for MLS. So that's kind of a quick thumbnail status report. This fall, over the next 2 months, 2-3 months, we'll continue our discussions with Major League Soccer and their leadership about timeline. We don't have a specific timeline, but we are bringing forward a proposal, a business plan, and hope to have news on that front, in the not too distant future.
Any follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. And Mr. Bagley, that's great about soccer, and I can't remember how much was estimated in the bill that soccer would bring to the state or just to economic activity in the state. Could you refresh my memory on that?
Well, I don't know, Senator Rosen, Madam Chair, I don't know if we had an economic impact. There's been some studies done. I think that, the 19,000 fans, is the average in the league. It would take some efforts to get to that level, but we're confident with the grassroots soccer and the significant youth participation in this market that we can get toward that number. But we can do and provide additional economic data. I don't have it off the top of my head, but just having 19,000 people come downtown will, generate economic activity in the city, in the county, and in the region and state. We'll provide more detail on that. But it is a significant. There are 17 home games, so 17, half of an NBA or NHL season. 17 home games, averaging 19,000, is a pretty significant opportunity. The ticket prices are much lower than the other professional sports. On the average, I think around $25 per ticket. So that would be factored in, but we can provide more details on that data at another day if you'd like.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bagley, one other question on the increased $49 million from the Vikings. It says it includes team finance contingency. Does that, without getting into the weeds on this, is there any other increased NFL from the contribution or negotiation or part, is that part of the $49 million?
No, Madam Chair, Senator Champion, the additional investment will be financed by the Vikings. It'll be equity and financing of our ownership. No additional NFL support on this additional $49 million, completely from the Vikings ownership.
I do have a question for you, Mr. Bagley. Are you comfortable talking to us about the Washington Redskins? One of the things that have been in the media, I know that I've gotten some emails from different members of this body. They wanted to know what the Vikings' position is on the Washington Redskins controversy and whether you all, what you really think about it.
Yeah, Senator Champion, yes, comfortable in talking with you about that issue. We do play Washington on November 2 at TCF Bank Stadium. We played them last year at the Metrodome and worked with Chair Calm Helgen and the Stadium Authority on that. But this year, as we have our next two seasons at TCF Bank Stadium, we're working with the university on putting our games together. It is a significant issue, and we are sensitive to it, and we take it very seriously. We have a significant Native American population in Minnesota, as you all know. We have a significant fan base that roots for our team in the Native American community, and we have business partners that are in that community. So we are in an ongoing dialogue and continue to have conversations with the community at large, as well as Native American community, those are ongoing. And working with the University of Minnesota leadership in addressing the matter. The difficult position that we're in is that as a business partner, we're one of 32 NFL teams, and we are obligated to market our opposing team. This weekend it's New England Patriots. On November 2 it'll be Washington. So it'll be we're obligated to market our opposing team, and we also have asked the NFL to come to Minnesota and to have some dialogue with our community on the matter. So we're trying to provide opportunities to make sure that those voices are heard the week leading up to the game, as well as having some dialogue with the NFL, the university, and the Vikings on the matter.
Any other questions on this issue of the Washington Washington? Even I shouldn't use Redskin. Washington. If nothing else, thank you so very much for your openness and your willingness to come talk to us about it. Oh, Senator Sharon.
I did have a question back on the soccer team. thank you for coming and being here talking about these things. I find the, and did during the legislative process, the discussion of adding soccer as a venue here as well important, not only for the economic issues that Senator Rosen talking about, but a double utilization of the facility makes more sense. But also, I don't see this in the new horizon, but you're talking about the young people really being interested in soccer with the kind of injuries that occur with what we do in youth sports around head injuries. The love of and may change in terms of what the preference is for how we let youth participate in sports from ones like football where there's just serious injury, life injuries to these kids early before they ever even get into high school or college football. So I like the idea from the fact that long term you may see a transitioning or a changing in the market's interest in these various sports. So I think that's the Vikes have a long healthy interest in the state for a long time, but long term these things change, and so now you've got a major investment in these kinds of facilities and you want to have more than one way of utilizing it. So if this franchise that you're talking about that's may be available, the 20th franchise, is taken up by a different organization, how frequently do these come up? What is the future for opportunity for a franchise if this one falls on the wayside?
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, excellent points, and would concur about both the use of the facility as well as the long-term vision for this sport and the impact of health, player health and safety in football. We've seen the decline in youth participation in football. We've seen it in baseball as well, but in football, it is in hockey, and you know the moms are making the decisions, and we're trying to work with we hired EJ Henderson as our youth football manager, former Viking great, is now taking on this issue of youth participation, but also health and player health and safety and teaching proper tackling technique and the like, and a focus on health and safety. And it is a big issue to the NFL. It is a big issue in youth sports for sure. But long term on the soccer, their stated goal is 20 teams by 2024. There are one or two franchises in the MLS that are not doing as well as they had hoped. I think Los Angeles market has two teams. And so there may be an opportunity to have a relocated franchise. We haven't really looked at that too deeply. I think what we've looked at is an expansion team, the 20th team. But I think over time the league will probably grow. It's on a great trajectory. Again, the location of our stadium being downtown at the confluence of two light rail lines. We have our sort of millennial population, young people moving downtown. And this is a younger fan base, and there's a lot that's headed in this direction. And we'll keep on it. We do think there's a great market for it, and we do think there's a strong interest in the Major League Soccer in expanding into this market. So we'll keep you apprised of that. But it could be a new franchise. It could be a relocation down the road. But right now we're focused on an expansion franchise.
All right, thank you. Any follow-up, Senator Sharon?
No.
Okay, thank you so very much.
Any other
questions of Mr. Bagley? Chair Kim Helgen, is there anything else that you wanted to say before we brought up Mr. Tittles, or would you like to be? Okay, so Mr. Tittles, if you could join the chair at the table, that'd be great. And while you're being seated, I would like to acknowledge the presence of Commissioner Lindsay, who's with us as well. So, okay, go ahead, Mr. Tittles.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Senators, Representatives. Definitely a privilege to present to you this morning about the activity from the equity perspective on this project. I'm Alex Tittle. I'm the equity director for the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority. I'd like to notice or mention that since February, the equity program continues to measure and report on this project. We had a lot of discussion this morning about transparency of the facility itself. But I also want to take you to a different type of transparency, which is resoluting around this project in equity. We are being very transparent on this project with respect to talking about how we are performing from a minority business, women business, veteran-owned business, workforce perspective, from the minority women and veterans as well, on a bi-monthly basis. We conduct bi-monthly meetings with respect to the guideline Stadium Equity Oversight Committee meeting. And I have to state that, you know, as Michelle mentioned earlier, we are exceeding all goals. Goals meaning, you know, how we're doing from a business perspective and then how we're doing from a workforce perspective. But I'd like to take a step back and say that, you know, a little over a year ago, a number of organizations, community members, and the like stated that these goals were unattainable, that these business goals were unattainable. Currently, as I get down to the bottom of this report, you'll notice that we're exceeding them in every area. From a transparency perspective, where we have online reporting that's detailed. So down at the bottom, you'll see some generic report about how we're doing, but there's a lot more detail that we advertise on a monthly basis. From workforce utilization, targeted businesses, our employment assistance firm, as well as our targeted zip codes. We talked about targeted zip codes, meaning which areas within Minnesota, particularly Minneapolis, that are high unemployment and high poverty areas. So we've identified those, and we are currently reporting on that. The audit function for this for the efforts under the equity program are being conducted by a couple different areas. One, the workforce. From a workforce, we are partnered with the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. Commissioner Kevin Lindsay and his staff are currently monitoring this project. People that actually work on the project, when they do go on the work site, they're not just taking your random sampling. They'll identify a company, and they'll go through it 100% and look at every single person and talk to every single person on the project from a compliance standpoint of, are you getting paid what you're supposed to be getting paid, all the way to a Title VI issues if they have any discrimination claims and the like. So to date, we're functioning extremely well in that area. Folks are very excited to be working on this project, and we're excited as well to report. Also, from the auditing function, we have our targeted business side. We were definitely honored to have the opportunity to hire an equity specialist. We talked about the 570-plus workers on the project. There are going to be over 200-plus businesses on this project as well. And it'll be a bit difficult for one person to kind of manage all that. So we have the opportunity to hire an equity specialist to strictly deal with those small businesses, as well as hiring prime contractors to make sure that we're getting the best bang for our buck and the inclusion responsible for this project. So we're happy to see that moving along. And then program activity. Our women, minority, veteran business enterprises, we've conducted a number of presentations, meet and greets to expose them to the project overall, just to let them know exactly how we're going to provide access to businesses. In the past, the targeted group business program for the state, the City of St. Paul of Minneapolis, the CERT Central Certification Program, as well as the DBE, or the Unified Certification Program for the federal government, are the ones that we use to certify small and underutilized businesses. So we conduct presentations and those types of things to kind of show them exactly how they should actually think about getting or engaging this project. It's very unique for different trades, and we try to give them that unique type of attention.
So, Mr. Tittles, as we look at the target businesses, does that include minority suppliers as opposed to just construction?
Absolutely. That includes minority suppliers. That includes actually construction companies that actually execute the project or execute the work. And it also includes truckers or trucking operators, the ITOs, if you will, independent trucking operators. So you can own a business if you have one truck. You can own a business if you have one trailer. And you and those folks are actually getting opportunities to work on this project as well. So, did I answer your question, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir. You may continue, unless there's someone else who has a question on that point.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Tittles. Obviously, you have reached and surpassed your goals. Has it been an issue of, well, I guess I'm more interested in, has there been some training for some of these highly skilled jobs and that are coming or will be coming for the minority or women? Have you been able to track any of that?
Absolutely.
Are we going to be able to sustain this percentage of our goal and what you've met already?
Mr. Kittles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rosen, to answer your question, I believe it's actually required by the legislation that you all passed that we award a contract to an employment assistance firm. By that, we have awarded the contract to Summit Academy OIC under the leadership of Lewis King and about 12 different small nonprofit organizations as well as schools. And I'll just name a few of them. You have the Minneapolis Urban League. You have Merrick Community Services out here in St. Paul, Minneapolis Community Technical College, St. Paul College. They all are part of this pipeline building employment opportunity. So what that does is we conduct a overview of where we are on the project. We talk to the contractors to find out how many people do you have on the job actually working for you. Second, we ask them how many minorities, women, do they have and will need to actually be able to respond to the expectations of this project. And from there, we go back to our employment assistance firm and say, we need you to focus on providing this many carpenters, this many electricians, that many pipe fitters, so on and so forth. And from there, they build a pipeline so that when we need them, when the unions cannot perform or cannot respond to the minority women or veteran expectation, there's a resource for them to actually answer that question. So there are no excuses. There's nothing but opportunity. So we're building the opportunity within this EAF concept. All right.
Anyone else? Okay, Mr. Tills, you may continue.
Sure. And then down at the very bottom here, you'll see that the construction, the first table is the construction workforce utilization. Obviously, the goals that were adopted for this project, 32% minority and 6% women. As of July of this year, total hours, 356 hours worked. Minority hours, 134,000 almost were trending at almost half. That's 38% against the 32%. Like I said earlier, they say that it couldn't be done. We're actually exceeding that expectation. For women, 32,894 hours at 9% against the 6% goal, and it's growing. And then, of course, as we stated we would do in our equity plan, we would track veteran activity as well. So 18,248 hours at 5% activity on the project to date.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tittles, quick question. In some worlds, the minority would include the women, but this is separate. You've separated the women out from the minority.
Mr. Tittles.
That's correct.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions? You may continue, Mr. Tittles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also, the targeted zip codes. There are about 16 different zip codes within the city, within the state, that we are monitoring. These are identified by the city of Minneapolis, and they are high unemployment and high poverty areas. Of that, there are 80 people to date working in those from those zip codes. And we get that information from the certified payrolls that the contractors submit on a weekly basis. moving on to the targeted business. As Michelle, as Chair Kelm Helgen mentioned before, 95% of the project is awarded, so we've got very little opportunity to continue to exceed the expectation on this project. All right, but we're doing some very unique things to make that happen. Subcontractors, larger subcontractors, are actually working with smaller subcontractors, meaning they're owning a mentor-protege type of relationship with these smaller contractors to ensure that they're successful. So we don't have issues of bankruptcy and those types of bad press that we possibly received on other projects. We're not going to see that here. Mortenson Thor has identified that issue, and we're tracking that on a regular basis as well. As far as targeted business overall, our minority business commitments to date, about $60 million for minority businesses. That's 10% against a 9% goal. Women businesses, $127 million. That's 21% against an 11% goal. And then, of course, veteran-owned small businesses, $7 million plus at a 1.2% participation for veteran-owned businesses on the project. So as far as our targeted businesses overall, from a holistic perspective, we've committed about $202 million, almost $203 million worth of work. That's at 32% performance on this project, as I mentioned. They said that we couldn't do it. We're doing more than that.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, Mr. Tittle. The veteran-owned small business, was there a goal for that? That's not mentioned at 1.2%.
Mr.
I would
Tittle.
Think this is an area that can really grow and could see some.
Mr. Chair, Senator
Tittle.
Rosen, you're absolutely correct. There are no goals. There were no goals established for veteran-owned small businesses. We've taken the approach of tracking it, because in unlike other projects, they don't track, or excuse me, there are no goals set for veteran-owned small businesses. We, unless it's a, let's say, a MnDOT project where there is a veteran preference program that requires goal setting on those types of projects. We're tracking it at this point. There are no goals set for it.
And it's my understanding, Mr. Tittles is a military man himself.
And
one of the things that he believed to be very important was to track and engage this equity plan to make sure that they are marketing to and reaching out to veterans as well, because that's a part of his makeup and also a part of what he believes, along with the authority, to be really important. And if I mention that in error, Mr. Tittles, you can correct me or exponentially expand what I just said.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Yes, I am a 10-year Army veteran, and it's just as important when we talk about targeted businesses, minority women businesses, that we also talk about veteran-owned small businesses. We as veterans have an opportunity to perform, and oftentimes are not looked at as an equal in this playing field. So we're attempting to level the playing field for all these targeted businesses, with veteran-owned small businesses being one of them.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We've been to some meetings where you've spoken to veterans groups about these concerns, and so I thank you and those that worked on this to get the veterans involved here. There had been some concern about the word getting out to veterans that of these jobs available. Just asking about, did this get out statewide, or are these veterans working, are they pretty much metro folks, or are we looking at people all over the state at some of these jobs?
Mr. Tittles.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, great question. I think that the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority hired the right guy, if you will. In my former life, I was with Minnesota Department of Transportation as the director for that civil rights office, and one of my most my most proud accomplishments was to go around the state and promote and develop networks around veteran-owned small businesses throughout the entire state, bringing them to the table. So a lot of the activity that was conducted with MnDOT, I got a chance to lean on that effort also to work with other organizations such as MEDA, Metropolitan Economic Development Association, and PTAC, the Procurement Technical Assistance Center, to continue to work with those networks to bring them to the table and provide them an opportunity to perform on this project, and we're seeing the fruits of that labor as well.
Any other questions of Mr. Tittles? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Tittles. Any closing comments, Chair Kim Helgen? Oh, I thought I saw your hand go up. Did your hand go up? Okay. Want to make sure I wasn't missing you there, Representative Anderson. Chair.
I just really appreciate the opportunity to provide the update. I think if anybody has an opportunity to just drive by the site, you'll be amazed to see the progress that has been made. And, you know, for us, it's in all the different categories and the work that Mr. Tittle has done, along with many other organizations such as the Department of Human Rights, the Minneapolis Civil Rights Office, and all the many community groups that are involved. It's been really, I think we've accomplished some great things, and we will continue that work. It's, but, you know, in the end, it's about Minnesota companies and Minnesota jobs, and we hear that from all of you all the time, from the governor and everyone else, that the focus has to stay on Minnesota companies and Minnesota workers. So that, to me, is what I keep at the forefront of my mind all the time. So.
And I think we have one more question from Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Helgen, thank you for that. I think we addressed a lot of the concerns around here today that have been brought forward, and I feel better because I could see the ongoing conversations that you will be having as the authority and with the concerns that are being addressed. But I would like to save the best for the last, and that's about the Super Bowl. Can you give us just a little bit of a rundown and how that was, how exciting it was to be awarded the Super Bowl for 2018?
Minneapolis was selected in May of this year as the 2018 Super Bowl site. I think it's going to be a great way for the community to come together. We're in the process now of forming a separate nonprofit organization that will be put together, funded by private donations, that will hire an executive director and staff to start doing all the hard work that has to be done to get ready for that event. And I think it's going to bring a lot of over 100,000 visitors to the state and a lot of business and economic opportunity. We've been contacted from, you know, everything from charter bus companies in Minnesota to all the many hospitality and entertainment venues. We're all very excited about being involved in this process. And it's not just Minneapolis. It's literally the whole broad metro area, because everyone will have to come together to host this kind of an event. We also, I should mention, are a finalist for Final Four, which is also that basketball tournament that comes, brings another 80,000 to 90,000 people to our state. It actually, when you're chosen to host a Final Four, along with that, you host the year before a preliminary round. So we're competing for the years 2018, 19, or 20. There are 8 finalists for a 4-year period. 17 is also one of the periods being selected. But we couldn't host 2017 because we wouldn't be open the year before to do the preliminary round. So we're just focusing our bid on 18, 19, and 20. There are 8 other seven other finalists, and we feel really positive about our potential to again be a host. You know, the Metrodome, when in its much younger phase, hosted 2 Final Fours and brought just incredible economic opportunity to the state. That event, kind of similar to the Super Bowl, has grown exponentially. It now is a 4-day event, and it just is a huge venue, bringing many people. So the NCAA and the Men's Basketball Committee were here about a month ago and toured the city and looked at the stadium site, and we showed them the images and the plans for our new design. They're really excited about the building, and they'll be making a decision. In fact, we were just told that November 11th is the date that we'll be going to Indianapolis to make our presentation. And then they'll make a decision shortly thereafter. So we should know sometime the end of this year as to whether we're selected as a venue for that. But we're confident and hopeful that we'll be successful.
So can you tell us who we are competing against?
Yes. The other finalists, if I can remember everybody, Indianapolis is a finalist. San Antonio, New Orleans, Dallas, who else?
And others.
St. Louis, I believe. And I'm missing one, and I'm not going to think of it. Atlanta, thank you. And Atlanta, of course, is building a new facility that will be done a year after ours. So, you know, that's all in the mix as well. So we're hopeful.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Well, this has been very informative, and I appreciate that, Chair Helgen. Can you then back it up to what's happening on the state level for our high school leagues? Any, you know, the true meaning of the People's Stadium, where we will be utilizing it the same as we did with the Metrodome.
Exactly.
And it's open. Can you just give us a rundown on that also?
Sure. You know, Lester Bagley actually mentioned that a big step that we've just completed is to hire a third-party operator who will be doing the marketing and the sales of the new stadium. They'll be under contract with the Stadium Authority, and they will actually be the ones who will operate the stadium. They will be hiring many of the employees who previously worked at the commission, but obviously this is a much bigger building, a much bigger venue, and I think we have many great opportunities to bring in all sorts of outside events. However, foremost in our discussions with them, the company we brought in is a company called SMG, and they operate venues. Oh, Houston is the other stadium that's a finalist as well. They operate many other venues that host big events and that are actually, owned by other stadiums that are owned and operated by public entities, such as Houston, the Superdome in New Orleans, Jacksonville. They are actually the largest company that operates stadiums around the country. So bringing them in and with their work previously with a lot of public institutions, we feel really comfortable that we're going to be able to balance that whole need for bringing in all sorts of outside activities that will bring a lot of revenue and economic opportunity to the state, along with continuing our tradition to host Minnesota State high school football and soccer, girls and boys soccer championships, high school and college baseball, rollerblading in the wintertime throughout the stadium. All those things will be accommodated. So we just are now bringing SMG on board. The contract is finalized. They will be meeting along with us with the Minnesota State High School League, and we'll start looking at how we can accommodate and ensure that all those events that always had been held in the Metrodome continue on in the new stadium. Because the fact of the matter is, most Minnesotans will experience the new stadium probably coming to a high school football, soccer, or baseball game rather than some other big event. Or maybe it's a, you know, dirt show, maybe it's motocross or monster trucks. All those things will continue and more. So I think you're going to see a lot of great opportunity. The other thing I would mention from the state's perspective, you know, we had the third-party operator came in and actually have given us, the state, a revenue guarantee of $6.75 million a year over and above the expenses that they will pay to operate the stadium. We will have this revenue available to maintain, you know, to make sure that our capital reserves and the maintenance of the facilities keep it up to the standard that hopefully we don't get so far behind like the Metrodome did eventually, that we can keep and maintain the building at a quality standard so that we are always competitive in this environment and continue to provide the kind of service that I think Minnesota is looking for. So a lot of good news.
Representative, excuse me, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While keeping the cost reasonable, SMG, they have the ability to raise prices.
That's part of it. Yes, the prices, it will be, and I always make the point, you know, with the rent, we have from the Vikings in particular, they're giving us the highest rent and capital investment annual payment of any NFL team in the country. We get the highest rent and capital investment payment. And essentially what that does is that pays a large portion of the operating costs. And what we can then do is heavily subsidize the high schools and colleges and youth groups that come in, and that will all continue. Absolutely. That is part of our mission. The legislation was very specific in the way it was developed, and our commitment is definitely there to continue that tradition.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Chair Helgen, I think that little fact is not very well known by the general public.
Okay, well, we'll continue to make that known because I go out, I talk to community and neighborhood groups, you know, a couple times a week. I go to chambers, I go to neighborhood organizations, Rotaries, Kiwanis, and whenever I go out, I always make the point, you know, the Vikings essentially have this beautiful facility that they're paying over the half the cost to construct for 10 days a year. And the other 350 days are basically the states. And it's those events, including the Super Bowl, the Final Four, concerts, you know, all even those revenue-generating things, that's money to the state. In addition, it really is our being able to provide this kind of urban park, if you will, that's an enclosed, weather-controlled thing for our high schools, colleges, and youth groups. And that all continues. And that's really all subsidized, you know, with the money that the NFL team pays. You know, $10 million a year is being paid to us for those 10 days from the Minnesota Vikings for $8.5 million in rent. And that escalates by 3% inflation every year by legislation. And $1.5 million in capital investment. So a total of $10 million a year, escalating at 3%, is being paid by the Minnesota Vikings. And that allows us to subsidize and accommodate all those other community events.
Any other questions, Senator Shannon?
Yes, you might have started to answer my question. So the I think that is important story that you're talking about now. But I was you were talking about the Vikings' obligations for the ongoing operations of the facility that underwrites the access for lots of other groups and organizations to be able to have this community park. Mm-hmm. But then you added at the last here that $1.5 million of that is directed towards capital investment. So when you were talking about the guarantee from the marketing company of $6 million, would you say again briefly that is that used for ongoing maintenance of the facility? Is that what you were saying? Not operations, but the depreciation, the deterioration of the facility. And is the $1.5 million that you just referred to from the Vikings, $10 million, also directed towards how are we providing for not just the ongoing operating costs but the capital, the facility maintenance and improvements and upgrades?
Right.
Chair Kim Hill.
Senator Sharon, Chair, I understand what your question is. We will. The part of $1.5 million of the Vikings contribution specifically goes into our capital reserves. In addition, we've got this $6.75 million guarantee that will be coming from SMG. Part of that $6.75 million goes to operations, and we'll have what we could do. We will be sort of developing a budget for the operations of the facility as we get further into this process, and we can come and talk with you about that. But a good portion, I mean, we eventually need to build up our capital reserves to the tune of about $20 million, mm-hmm. so that we always can handle any large event, if something, I mean, you think about the Metrodome, mm-hmm. You know, there were things along the way that would happen that you have to be ready to respond to. Now, we don't have an air-inflated roof, so we don't have to worry about the roof coming down, but this is obviously a very large, complicated building to operate, and all those pieces of the building, we have to make sure we've got reserves to not only maintain, but also be able to improve and kind of keep up all our technology, replace things, and stay current. So it'll be a combination of the capital investment that comes, this $1.5 million that comes from the team, along with a portion that's not needed for the ongoing operations that will be put into our reserves to maintain the building. So it's a combination of those things. And I think it's probably a important piece of all this to keep all that in mind. You know, the only other thing I would mention is there has been actually over $700 million that already is being invested in just those blocks right around the stadium that really has resulted because of this iconic design. I mean, people want to be located around here. The two Wells Fargo towers that are $400 million of that investment, as well as a major clinic project that HCMC is investing in because of all of the residential development that's happening all around this, like in a very close proximity. So already when you look at the $350 million that the state has invested, over two times that amount before, I mean, we aren't even, we're 6 months into construction, two years away from opening, and already under development is over $700 million in investment in this area. And those will bring jobs and pay taxes and, you know, all those things. So, you know, I think the intent of the legislation was not only the jobs at the stadium, but also just the economic opportunity of all this investment coming around it. And then having this facility that satisfies all the needs of the high schools and the colleges and the nonprofits. And, you know, really what makes it that sort of Minnesota people's stadium that'll all be accommodated. So we keep all that in the forefront of our mind as this development goes on. But I keep reminding people that things are, there is return coming to the state already.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. You might have enjoyed listening to us at the groundbreaking ceremony for the Mankato Arena, which houses Minnesota State University's hockey, Division I hockey. Because the story there is very similar in terms of the recapturing of the tax base in downtown Mankato. The number of jobs that are created simply from the project are dwarfed by the economic activity that occurs as a result of that investment and the renewal of an aging downtown area. So when the legislature fights about whether or not it's an appropriate bonding request to invest in facilities like this because of their economic potential, I think the evidence is clear that initiatives like this do have much broader reach in terms of their economic capacity. But I would like to go back, and you may not be able to answer this now, but I have more questions or more clarity. I need to understand the plan for establishing the funds, the $20 million, or whatever the number is that needs to be kept to secure ongoing facility capital improvements, renewal, refreshing the building, fixing those windows or fixing the glass or the ongoing. And how is it designed in the plan, not only to fund it, but you're going to build that resource. It isn't something that you have up front. You have a plan to use these extra dollars to build this fund for ongoing capital expenditures that can be raided and robbed for other purposes. So I'm interested to know what the plan is for building that, what the parameters are for securing it and maintaining it.
Chair Kim
Hilgen. Not just operations, it's also capital investment.
Sorry about that. Chair Kim Hilgen.
Right. You know, we're just now in the process of starting to look at the building operations and what it's going to take and what those, I mean, we've kind of targeted a number for our reserves and how that will be built over time. It certainly won't be a $20 million reserve the day we open the building. But as you know, similar to any other construction project, the first few years, you definitely have things that you need to fix and that don't work and need to be improved or done differently. But by and large, when everything is new, you don't have the need to have a great deal of capital investment. So we are looking at a plan that builds those reserves over time, but by, you know, a certain year, and I can come back to the group and lay that all out when we have it in more detail, and then, you know, show you what the plan is and how it will be built over time.
Thank you, and thank you, Chair. I just emphasizing that because if we don't do that and we don't have a plan and it's not protected, then, or not planned for, then those costs come in a, who's going to pay for that improvement, and it comes in a big number later, and it's difficult. It's difficult in our environment here to make those kind of commitments. Just the capital, just the improvements in the renovation at the capital are a perfect example of how difficult capital investment dollars are to come by. So I'm hoping that you do have a plan and that it's structured in a way that it can't be redirected for other purposes.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Representative Anderson.
Thanks. One final question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And maybe this is getting ahead, kind of an operational thing, but I thought of a question when you talked about the money coming from SMG, for example. In the case of a major event being booked to the new stadium, Super Bowl, or let's say the Final Four, and just say they pay, and I'm just pulling a number out, $1 million in rent, does that all go into the operational budget of SMG, or does the state get some of those large sums up front?
Chair Kim Helgen.
Right. So just so you understand, the way that contract is structured, and it actually is available on our website, it's a public document, so you can see how it's structured. Basically, what SMG comes in and does is they operate as our agent. So everything that comes in is the state. I mean, the state is the owner and operator of the building, and then we contract with SMG. So essentially what they do is the, you know, all the revenue comes in, and it all comes in through us. I mean, it's a state account that you have, but it's managed by SMG, and it's completely transparent, and the state auditor will be looking, you know, similar to the audit we just completed. They'll continue to do those every year. But the way it's structured, regardless of what the expenses are to maintain the building, the state is guaranteed annually a profit of $6.75 million. So obviously SMG is anticipating that the revenues that are coming in will be enough to cover the expenses plus this amount of profit. And SMG does not get a fee until we are paid that $6.75 million and all the expenses are paid. But all the revenues that come in and then the expenses that are paid are all coming into this state fund that's being managed by SMG. Then at the end of the year, no matter what, even if the expenses have been higher than the revenues that come in, we're given a check for $6.75 million. And then the way the contract is structured, they get the next $500,000. That's their fee. So after we're paid $6.75, they get the next $500,000. Then the next $1 million that comes in as revenue is split 50-50 between the state and SMG. Anything potentially over that, if we're lucky enough to have additional revenue, 80% comes to the state and 20% goes to SMG. So from the state's perspective, and again, I think we probably have negotiated one of the best agreements that you're probably going to see in the country, because we had three firms that came in very aggressively wanting to manage this facility, because I think everyone sees great opportunity here for a very successful project.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Chair Kim Helgen. And I would like to say that Senator Reinert and Representative Davenport indicated that they cannot be with us today or on the telephone. And I would also like to acknowledge that we should have both Senator Miller and Representative Atkins on the telephone. Any closing questions or comments before we get ready to go? Chair? Co-chair? Vice Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, I know we can't approve the minutes because we don't have a quorum, but I wanted to bring up that the minutes do have an ongoing issue referred to on the facilities study, the legal barriers to that moving forward, and maybe we could ask Representative Davenport to update us that at the next meeting.
That would be great. That's one of the things that we wanted him to update us on, and neither Representative Davenport nor Senator Reinert could be with us, but that's something that we will put on the agenda for our next meeting. And our next meeting will be chaired by Senator Rosen, and that date will be determined at in the future, I guess. Mm-hmm. Right? Anything else? If not, meeting adjourned.